And away we go. The final hour of the Rob Brown Show is live from SEC Media Days here in Atlanta, Georgia, the College Football Hall of Fame. And we are thrilled to have you along for the ride. 4 days of college football excellence gets underway. Today's the day, people. You can say whatever you want. It's just media days. It's just a bunch of you dudes with microphones. Today is day one of college football. I don't care what you say about it. It's official. It's here. We're locked in. I took a trip around the CFB, HOF, just a few minutes ago during the break. And there's a couple of things I'm pretty pumped about here, great one. Aside from the fact that we are awaiting Greg Sankey to start talking about the state of the conference here in just minutes from now. And when he does, we will tap in to that audio. We'll bring you the first few minutes of the press conference live. We'll react to some of the things that Greg Sankey has to say, take some of the Q&As, etc. Shane Beamer and the Gamecocks later on today. So is Brian Kelly, family of the LSU Tigers. We'll check in with them. And again, throughout the course of the day, we will record some more interviews. We'll bring you some news and notes and whatnot on the social media feed. And, of course, play you back some of the audio on tomorrow's edition of The Rob Brown Show. But I did take a stroll as I am upstairs around the upper portion of the College Football Hall of Fame facility. And there's a couple of things that I'm very excited about. Number one is just the folks who are here. I did not get a chance to introduce myself yet, though I very much look forward to, ladies and gentlemen, the voice of college football, the face of college football, the authority of college football's in the building. Great one. Heather Denich is here. Heather's walking around. Poof. Heather Denich is in the building. Poof.
Yeah, I'm not playing it. I don't want her to think I'm being disparaging in case you have a shot to actually get her on the show.
Disparaging. That's a top 10 soundbite on the show. That's a place of honor and respect of Heather Denich. Poof. Absolutely love it. I am going to try to get Heather Denich on the show. She is here. I did see her walking around a couple of minutes ago. Paul Feinbaum down on the SEC Network. I'm looking down at him right now. I believe Laura Rutledge is down there. My dog, Peter Burns, who will be coming on the show later this week, as will former NFL tight end Benjamin Watson, is going to be joining us on the show later on this week as well. Peter, I got to tell you, Peter, I'm looking down right there, pulling off the it's not salmon. It's like lighter than salmon. It's a hard color to pull off. And my guy Peter Burns absolutely nailing it down there. So we'll have him on the show later on this week. But none of that, although exciting as all of that is.
I do have a real quick question. How hard has it been to get around Atlanta? That's going on.
Oh, dude, yesterday was a bleep show downtown. So I got in yesterday. About 4 o'clock, there was a standstill on I-85 on the way in. So, got in a little later than I wanted. Got in around 4 o'clock, and registration was from 3 to 5. So, I had to get to the hotel ASAP. So I just had to come here and park. First off, let me tell you what was going on downtown yesterday. Yeah, the Beyonce show at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, which is only a half a mile or so from here. You had WWE Evolution, and by the way, I did not get a chance to watch it. I decided last minute not to go, great one, because by the time I got registered and set in and everything, there was only like 30 minutes until the show started, and I could have made it, but by the time that I saw that and I went online for tickets, they had popped up to like $90 to sit up top, and I was like, I should have gone, because from what I heard, it slapped as a show.
It was pretty good.
I heard it was maybe show of the year so far.
Yeah, something from that may end up in What the X.
Good. We are going to talk about that one because I heard it was a absolute whale of a show. I will also say that there's obviously the MLB All-Star game that is going on. There was like 10 things going on last night, and I did not it ended up getting to a point where I was like, no, there's just too much going on right now. I'm not gonna make it down there. So I parked. It was like $50 to park downtown. I got registered, and then I was like, you know what, I'm gonna go to the aquarium. And I went to the aquarium because at night they do like a They do like a like nights. It's like a feature on Sea Life After Dark. Dude, it was actually super dope. They had like performances and like trapeze artists and
tonight
like,
on Sea Life After Dark.
It was very artsy fartsy. But also, they turned it into a bar. And I'm like, okay, well, this is awesome. So I did that last night. And then I ended up just heading back to the hotel. But last night was absolute chaos. Turns out at 4:30 in the morning, downtown Atlanta not really popping. So, I mean, there were definitely some stragglers who were wrapping up the evening, but none of them were in the hotel. So we were good. All right, I tell you what, looks right behind me, Commissioner Sankey has just started his speech. Let me see if I can get our audio tapped in for that. And we'll bring you that here in just a minute from right now. As soon as I get that up and running, Greg Sankey is speaking downstairs, giving his State of the Southeastern Conference. So I'm working on getting that audio pulled up, which I had until I didn't just a moment ago. No, we're not there yet. All right, working on getting that started, working on getting that running. And once I do, we'll tap in with Greg Sankey here in just a minute from right now. In the meantime, got a few other things that I'm going to get through throughout the course of the show today. We have already run through the ceiling and floor for most of the Southeastern Conference teams. We do have a few left to get to, and I will do obviously a dedicated segment about the South Carolina Gamecocks coming up here in just a minute from right now. So if you are a Gamecock fan, stay tuned for that. Again, trying to get the audio going, and I guess we're going to – you know, Alonzo, it worked 20 minutes ago, didn't it? Like, we had it all set up and everything. Unbelievable.
I do recall being able to hear stuff, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll work on that. Of course, it's always at the thing. I will say this before we get there. On the other side of the stadium of the platform for me, on the other side of the arena where I am, there is, Lonzo, there is a test your athleticism station, and in that station they have a couple of different like athletic things that you can do. They have a vertical measurement, so you like stand there and you put your hand up and it measures you, then you jump up and slap the wall, tells you what your vertical leap is. They have a tackling dummy where you punch the pad like an offensive lineman in pass pro, and it tells you how much force you generated when you punch that thing. And the question is, not a question, statement is, I have to go over there and embarrass myself, right? I got to go baseline myself and see if I still got it, right? I feel like I'm obligated.
Well, someone's running it, or does it just do it automatically?
No, it's like hooked up to a little computer. You push a button and it says, all right, monitor you. So, like, I don't have to show my results to anybody.
No, what I'm saying is, you know, tomorrow morning when you get there and no one's there, go over there and do it yourself and then decide if you want to share it. Then you're not embarrassed. If you were going to be embarrassed, because no one will see it.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. I'm.
But I know you, Rob Brown. You need an audience. So,
here's the problem:
the adrenaline from people watching will make you perform better. That's what's going to happen.
I'm gonna tell you what the problem is. Here's the problem: it is who's here. Because on the other side over there, as I walked the circle during the break a few minutes ago, on the other side, there's like a lot of the podcasters are over there, and I'm talking about like the younger guys, all right? Like the Crane and Co. guys are over there with their video set up. They're doing their live show over there. As a matter of fact, I saw Jake Crane walking by just a minute ago. I know he's big on Wire to Wire. Saw those guys over there. I'm gonna say this, and I don't care. They got some boys over there from Locked On Longhorns, the Locked On contributor for the Texas Longhorns. That might be the most attractive group of podcaster dudes I've ever seen in my life. Like, I turn the corner and I'm like, are you guys here for a GQ shoot or cover football, man? Like, that, you are the most handsome four dudes I've ever seen in my life. And they're all like, they all got it. They're all like, we work out, bro. And I'm like, if I go over there and start popping that tackling dummy in front of these boys, I know all four of them are going to be like, out of the way, grandpa. Let me show you how it works here.
Yeah, but hold on. Now, there is gym strength, and then there's real strength, okay? You might have some real strength. You might be able to show them that.
I mean, I'd like to think that in that moment, if called to the carpet and challenged by the next generation of broadcasters in the college football landscape, I would like to think that I would be able to, like, summon the strength of my ancestors and have that, like, you know, there's those videos on the internet where, like a toddler gets trapped under a car and, like, suddenly dad can, like, Jalen Hurts squat the car, like, pick the car up for the kid to crawl out. That kind of, like, adrenaline-induced dad strength that you hear about. I'd like to think that if I walk over there and I give that thing a shot and I get called to the carpet by a couple of the youths of the broadcasting world, that I would be able to reach down deep and summon that adrenaline-inspired, I want to prove that I still got it strength and make it happen. The problem is, I don't think that's like a I don't think that's like a natural thing, right? Like, I think that's a thing that somebody's got life has got to be on the line. And while it would be my own personal image and belief about myself, I don't know if I'm going to be able to summon that much old man strength to pull that off, and I'm a little apprehensive about
it. Here's the thing. The Swole Bros, they're probably worried if they put too much into it, they might, you know, tear a pec or hurt a quad or something. So they're going to hold back a little bit.
They gotta get back for the workouts, man. I gotta take advantage of that. All right, boys, don't go too hard in the paint while you're trying to do this, because you don't want to tear a quad down there, do you? You don't want to VKM yourself, do you? All right. Tell you what, Greg Sankey is speaking. For whatever reason, unfortunately, the electronic link to listen in that they sent is not working. Lonzo, can we do this? And if the answer is no, I'm good with that. We can figure it out. Can we run to a break just a couple of minutes early? I think I have a way to get jacked into the actual analog box over there. Let's run to a break. I'm going to see if I can get us plugged in and working on that. And hopefully when we come back, we'll be able to check in with Greg Sankey, listen to a little bit of his introductory press conference. I will let you know about that when we come back here in just a minute from right now. I am Rob Brown, the great Alonzo, the ones and twos, back in the network studio. We're back after this. It is the Rob Brown Show. It is the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show, live on the Fan Upstate from SEC Media Days here in Atlanta, Georgia. Greg Monlonzo back in the network studio. We are going to, here in just a moment from now, go down live to SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, who is at the podium giving his start. We'll check in real quick, and I will tell you that obviously there is no set agenda on what Greg Sankey is saying, but let's take a listen and see where we're at.
By now, you need to raise your hand and be identified with your name and affiliation before you ask a question. We'd appreciate you doing that. We do have two microphone helpers who will get to you.
All right, so we're about to go.
All information for me.
Question and A, period. So here's what I'll do. I'll keep an eye on that because it is literally right behind me. And once they start calling reporters up to ask questions of Greg Sankey, we will check in and listen to what the conference commissioner has to say live from the podium. It is, as we mentioned, South Carolina Media Day here at SEC Media Days. We have Shane Beamer, Lenora Sellers, and a few other players stopping by, including Nick Barrett and DK Smith, who are going to join us here at our little station a little bit later on in the broadcast day, in interviews that we will run back to you here in just a few minutes.
2025 IJMM. Lunch will be served each day in the International Ballroom D next door to the...
Oh, we're giving a schedule update, Lonzo. You want a schedule update?
I mean, I just heard when lunch was served. I saw the breakfast you ate earlier, so lunch is probably going to be nice.
You know, I got to tell you, I'm very appreciative. I'm going to say this. If you serve your scrambled eggs unseasoned, I judge you a little bit, is all I'm saying. You know what I mean? Like a little salt and pepper. Like, I understand you want to let people season to taste. I get it.
I think it's your fault for not looking for the condiment stand, which they probably have one down there somewhere.
I did see one after I got back to the table and got my eggs already, but at that point I already sat down and I just wanted some damn eggs. So it is what it is. All right, we will go back down to Greg Sankey here in just a minute when he starts taking questions and answers from the gathered media in attendance. There's probably a couple hundred people down there waiting for their chance to grab a mic and ask the commission some questions. I assume that there will be some conversations about playoff expansion. I'm sure that that is going to come into play. I am sure there will be some questions about perhaps conference expansion down the line, which I think at this point is we're all kind of established, right? Like, it is what it is for right now. We got to get through the playoff expansion. We got to get through some of the other stuff before we get there. I'm waiting for... Why did I suddenly lose? This is just... I guess we lost the audio feed. So I got to tell you, we're off to a rip-roaring start here this morning. Well, by the way, that's not on me. That's not my fault.
I was going to say, you're there by yourself. So, I mean, you know.
It's all good. We're going
to... We have limited staff. We have... we're unable to send more than one person. And not too many people want to go to Atlanta. That might be part of it too. I don't know.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's continue down while we wait to see if we get the audio feedback from Commissioner Sankey. A and B. While we wait to see if when we get the Q&A started, let's keep going down the path we were going down earlier, which is looking at the teams around the Southeastern Conference and what is expected of them this year, both ceiling and floor expectations. I will go up next to the Running Rebels of Mississippi, Ole Miss. This is interesting. The Rebels leave home before they go play Georgia in week 8. The Rebels leave home one time in the first 7 weeks of the season. This has got to be one of the most interesting schedule setups, not just in the SEC, maybe in college football. Listen to the schedule. Georgia State, then they are at Kentucky week 2. Then it is home against Arkansas, home against Tulane, home against LSU, home against Washington State. Then it's back-to-backers at Georgia and at Oklahoma, followed by a return back home for South Carolina, the Citadel, and Florida. They wrap it up on the road at Mississippi State. That is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of their 12 games all at the crib this year. That's about as beneficial of a schedule as you can get. And by the way, it ain't exactly the gauntlet of an SEC schedule that some of these other teams are having to play. So I do think there's a little bit of benefit in that for Ole Miss. I am going to say that realistically, I think Ole Miss could be another one of those possible 10-2 teams. I think it is a realistic chance they get to 10-2 this year. But I also think that there's a 6-6 season in there. I also think there is a 6-6 season. You lost Jackson Dart. You lost a lot of your offensive production this year. I do think that they will not. I think 6-6 is the layup. I don't think it's any worse than that. Realistically, I think this team is probably looking closer to an 8-4, maybe a 7-5. I think they're going bowling just on the gotta win games, like definitely will get win games. And then the question mark is going to be some of those question mark games, right? It's going to be Washington State. It's going to be Kentucky. It's going to be Oklahoma. It's going to be South Carolina. And it's going to be Florida. How many of those can they get? If they can get 2 of those, I think 8-4 is on the table. If they can get 3 of those, I think 9 wins is on the table. 9-3 is on the table at that point. So I think that that's both of those are realistic. Let's go to Tennessee. They are 27-1. To win the conference. I think the absolute best case outcome for UT is probably a 10-2 season. I think 10-2 is probably a best case scenario for this squad. Will they get there? I don't know. I'm not necessarily banking on it. Tennessee will need to get 10 wins to get back to the playoffs this year. 9 victories guarantees nothing. For the Vols to reach double-digit wins, Joey Aguilar, you will remember, transferred over from Appalachian State. Joey Aguilar will have to be not just a player, he will have to be a difference maker. There are 4 games on this year's slate that I would say are, I don't want to say swing games, but I don't know what else to call them. I think Oklahoma and Florida are both winnable games for Tennessee this year. Then there's Georgia and Alabama. And I do think that Georgia and Alabama are likely going to be 2 teams that are coming into this, frankly, probably better than Tennessee is. That does not mean that Tennessee cannot get them. But They've got a first-year quarterback at Tennessee coming up from Appy State. They had to turn over the last couple of years a lot of their wide receiver core. That is obviously going to be a bit of a setback when you're breaking in a new quarterback. They open with Syracuse, Eastern Tennessee State, Georgia, and UAB. All four of those games at home. They got to come out of that slate 3-1 with the only loss being to Georgia. Then they're at Mississippi State, back home for Arkansas, Alabama on the road, Kentucky on the road, home for Oklahoma, New Mexico State on the road at Florida, back home for Vanderbilt. I think this is probably a 9-3 team. I think there's probably a setback in talent. I think 9-3 is probably my roof. Is there a path to 10-2? Yes, but I think it would require a win over Georgia or Alabama, and I'm just not there yet. I also think this team could end up being 6-6. I really do. I think 7-5 is more likely. I think 6-6 is on the table. That is going to be determined by Syracuse, by the Orange in week one. This is an upstart team. New head coach, new quarterback, pointed in a different direction. They are very excited. I am really intrigued to see what direction Syracuse goes this year. You got Georgia a couple of weeks later, and that's going to be the determining factor to figure out if they've turned a corner or not. Let's go with the Texas Longhorns. We'll do South Carolina in the final segment. Texas plus 290, the odds on favorite to win the SEC. I don't need to spend a ton of time on it. Best chance, 12-0, undefeated behind Arch Manning. But I also do not think that it is unfair to ask the question, is Arch Manning him? Do we truly believe that Arch Manning is that guy? Is Arch Manning a guy who spent some time last year on the field, spent a lot more on the bench? Arch Manning spent some time, obviously, behind Quinn Ewers last year. Steve Spurrier asked the question 2 weeks ago, if he was that good, that transformational, that much of a dude, why was he on the bench? A lot of Texas fans have said, because of exactly this. We knew Quinn was good enough to get it done last year. Even if we didn't, we knew he was good enough to get it done last year. And if he was good enough to get it done last year, why would you make the switch? Why would you make the change? Why would you jump to that guy when you had the guy? Even if he was a little banged up, why would you pull the trigger on that? And I think it's fair. I don't agree with it, but I think it is fair. Arch Manning this year, I think it's fair to have questions about him. I think it's fair to ask the question, is he ready for this? I think it's fair to ask the question, is this a guy that coming into his first year as QB1, is this a guy with the pressure of the Manning family dynasty name attached to him? Is this a guy with the benefit of having a year to sit back? Is this a guy that is going to handle the pressure? Or a guy that's going to buckle under it? Is this a guy that's ready to go 12-0? Or is there an 8-4 season in there because Texas ends up dropping a couple of those games? We have mentioned some of those games that I am concerned about. We have mentioned the fact that they play Georgia in the regular season this year. That game does not even have a date attached to it yet. And it doesn't have a date attached to it yet for one reason and one reason alone. If Texas beats Ohio State in week one, Georgia-Texas may be a national championship preview that we get in the regular season. Is that a losable game? Yes. You're telling me that the Aggies under Mike Elko don't want to prove that they've arrived by knocking off the Longhorns? Of damn course they do. You were telling me that the Buckeyes of Ohio State, Lonzo, what would it mean to Ryan Day, coming off a natty, coming off having the questions answered, how big would it be for the Buckeyes to get a win over Texas in week one?
Well, yeah, I mean, that was chances are Ohio State's going to come into the season ranked number one. So you need to get out there and prove that you are that. And what better than the team that you just played and the team that is projected to be either one or two?
This is a 1-2 matchup. And I don't know who's going to be one and who's going to be two. This is a 1-2 matchup. This is a national championship. Let's put it this way. The Longhorns, Lonzo, have two potential national championship previews on their schedule. They got Ohio State They got Ohio State at Ohio Stadium in week one.
It is the Horseshoe.
Yeah, no, I know. I almost said the Big House, and then I said the Horseshoe, but then I thought, no, the Horseshoe's Michigan because I'm a dummy. And I was just very concerned that Lonzo was going to teleport through the Comrex and hit me in the face for calling it the Big House.
We could have technical difficulties. We could definitely have that.
Exactly. Texas has got two national championship previews on their schedule. They got Ohio State and they got Georgia. And here's the fun part, great one. Both of those are road games for Texas. Both of those are road games for Texas. That could right there be 10-2. And now you're fighting because you got A&M on that schedule. You got Florida on that schedule. That's 8-4 if it goes squirrely for them. So I think it's fair to ask the question, is Arch up to it? And if the answer is no, it could be a very long, disappointing season for the Texas Longhorns. A&M, we'll do A&M last. They are 15-1 odds to win the Southeastern Conference. Best case for this team, I really do think 10-2 is a possibility. Run game is very solid. They have got stars coming back at wide receiver, Marcel Reed at quarterback. I do not think we are going to know what this team looks like until we get to week number three. When we get to week number three, I think we'll see our first taste of what this team is going to look like. They got UTSA and Utah State, and then the Aggies in week three are on the road in the gaze of Touchdown Jesus, taking on the Notre Dame Fighting Irish in South Bend, Indiana. After that, Auburn, Mississippi State, Florida, Arkansas, LSU, Missouri, South Carolina, Samford, and Texas to end the year. I think the best case for this team is 10-2. It's in there. Do I think they're getting a 10-2? No, I think it's an 8-4 football team. 8-4, though, is a possibility. So is 5-7. Is there regression for A&M? They were one SEC win shy of a berth in the league title game last fall. Part of that was a late season falter. I think it was Mike Elko coaching above his head. Remember, he came over from Duke and not really been in that spot, even though he led Duke to some pretty good runs. I don't think he had been at that level of pressure yet. I think that kind of buckled him a little bit. You got that Florida game. If DJ Lagway is a breakout player, A&M's defense is very sturdy up front, but maybe not super, super fast laterally. That could come into play when it's all said and done. I think there's 5-7 possibility here. I also think that there is a possibility that team could be 10-2. All right, here's what we're going to do. Let's see. Are we back to Greg yet?
He asked, do you just really appreciate the opportunity to play college football?
No, that is Garrett Nussmeier, the starting quarterback for the LSU Tigers. So they have flipped the feed on me. Here's what we will do is I'm going to get sent a digital file of the commissioner's entire speech later on. I will cut that up. I will drop little nuggets throughout the course of the day on our social media, and we will run the highlights of Greg Sankey's speech on tomorrow's show. I will also later on today be checking in with Diesel and Cole Bryan. Cole Bryan. Kerosene and Cole Bryan.
Yeah, get
Diesel
the names
and Cole
right.
Bryson.
Yeah.
On Wire to Wire this afternoon. I will get you everything I got throughout the course of the day when we get there later on today. But let's do this. Let's run to a break. When we come back here in a minute, we will wrap up the show here on South Carolina Gamecock Day by talking about the South Carolina Gamecocks. Let's talk about the actual expectations. Let's talk about the actual ceiling. Let's talk about the actual floor. You heard Jay Busby of Yahoo Sports, covers college football for that outlet, say earlier he thinks South Carolina probably not ready to join the ranks of Georgia, of Texas, of Alabama. Good enough to snipe one or two of them, maybe not quite ready to compete for a conference title. Do we agree? Where do we think they stack up? Let's address that, the ceiling and the floor for the Gamecocks, as we wrap up the Rob Brown Show next, right here on the Fan Upstate. It is the Rob Brown Show live at SEC Media Days here in Atlanta, Georgia, the College Football Hall of Fame, the center of the college sports universe for the next 4 days, and we are right here in the heart of it. I will let you know that the SEC feed is flipped over to the players' room. We just spent a couple of minutes on, so when I did during the break, listening to LSU quarterback Garrett Nussmeier talking to the media. Of course, Garrett Nussmeier, a transfer quarterback who made his way over to LSU during the break. And I'm very simply going to say that this dude is like the I don't know, like the most Texas kid. He came over as just a Texas dude, and came over as the most Texas dude I've ever heard during the break. It was absolutely incredible listening to him talk. He's just like, you know, when you get on down here to Texas or to LSU, there's a special brotherhood here. It's fantastic. We will get some audio from the LSU Tigers and, of course, the South Carolina Gamecocks as we are actively waiting for Shane Beamer and the Gamecocks to take their place at the podium. If we get a couple of minutes of Shane Owen and the gang before we take a break, we'll check in live on his press conference. But before we get there, we have run through all of the Southeastern Conference teams, my expected ceilings and floors for each of them, with the exception of one, and that, of course, is the South Carolina Gamecocks. We save South Carolina for last. 28-1 odds to win the Southeastern Conference. So, what is a reasonable, legitimate expectation for both the ceiling and the floor for the 2025 Gamecock football program? I'll give you mine here in a minute. Before we do, great one, I will bring you in first. What is your projected ceiling and projected floor for the Gamecocks of South Carolina in 2025?
Floor, I'm going 8 wins. Ceiling, I'm going 10.
I think that's very fair. I think that's very fair. I would probably say my floor is a little bit lower. I think 6-6 bowl eligibility is the floor. I would also say, is this fair? I'll ask it as a question instead of make it as a statement. I do believe it can be made as a statement, but Zoe, I will ask you as a question. Is it fair to say that 6-6 would be a disappointment for this football team this year?
Absolutely, especially after last year and expectations and seeing how the team grew from 1 year to – and Lenora Sellers should get you more than 6 wins.
I agree. I think the only way that 6-6 becomes acceptable – honestly, and even if Lenora Sellers go down, because you've got Aaron Nolan back there, like, you've got some dudes in the mix, right? Like, you are trying to establish and set up who's next in that role when we get there. I think 6-6, even if you lost Lenoris, would be a step back. But assuming that you don't, I don't think 6-6 is acceptable this year. You got Virginia Tech on the 31st of August to open up the season. Then it's SC State and Vanderbilt. All three of those are home games back to back to back. Then you're on the road at Mizzou, back home for Kentucky, at LSU, back home for Oklahoma and Alabama, on the road at Ole Miss and then the Colt, and then back home for Coastal Carolina and Clemson. I'm going to say the ceiling is 10-2. This team was a win away from the college football playoffs last year. 10-2 might very well get you into the college football playoffs this year. 10-2 might get it done for you. Now, you're going to need a little help. There will have to be some teams on the bubble that have to take a slip and fall somewhere along the lines. Is that a possibility? It absolutely is. There is also the possibility that you end up at 8-4 on the outside looking in. I think 6-6 is the floor. I think there is an outish chance, and I will say this. I've seen a couple of projections for South Carolina that have said that 5-7 is a possibility. Why? Well, there is a 5-game stretch that could include 5 consecutive straight teams inside the top 20. Last year, you lost most of those games. LSU, we all know what happened against LSU. It is one of a tiny number of college football games that I am accepting of the take that the refs screwed the game. I genuinely believe that. That is a game that South Carolina won. That is a game that South Carolina had in the bag. And I, to this day, believe that is a game that South Carolina had taken away from them. Alabama, you slammed your own junk in the door. You had them beat in their crib. You messed yourself up. You shot yourself in the metaphorical foot for that one. You handle business against Vanderbilt. You handle business against Missouri. You handle business against Kentucky. You should be 5-0. Because I will say, I do think that I like the direction Virginia Tech is headed in. I do. I like the direction Virginia Tech is headed in. I don't think they're there yet. That's a beatable football team. You got to beat SC State. I think you got to beat Vanderbilt. Again, I don't think you can take it easy. I don't think you can rest. I don't think you can R&R your way through Vandy. That's the team that knocked off Alabama last year, and Diego Pavia, their starting quarterback, is back this year. That's not a gimme game, but let's say you handle business there. I am at this point now comfortable and willing to say I think Mizzou on the road, even in the other Columbia, I think you have to make that a win. I think we have to consider that a win that should get you to 4-0 to start. Kentucky, coming to the crib. I've already said it. This is the worst Kentucky team under Mark Stoops since he got there. Worst Kentucky team since he got there. That's got to be 5. Then we get to the meat and potatoes. You were at LSU. LSU was desperate. We did earlier this week, late last week. Who's the supervillain? Who's the Lex Luthor for your team this year? Brian Kelly is everybody's Lex Luthor this year. He is everybody's creepy, power-driven, maniacal bad guy. You're at LSU. That's a tough out. I'm going to say L. You're back home for Oklahoma. You've heard a lot of people, and you're going to hear a lot of people around here this week say, this is Brent Venables' best effort. This is the best we're going to see out of Brent Venables. This is the best we're going to see out of Oklahoma. I think you kind of got to win that game. I think that's got to be – if you want to say – that the South Carolina Gamecocks have made their way up into the upper echelon of the second tier of SEC programs, which I think is fair and respectable. You got to get Oklahoma. Then you got Alabama. That's got to be a revenge game, right? Like these are the games that if you want to be 10-2, these are the games that if you want to be in a fighting position to make the SEC championship game, these are the wins you have to have at LSU. Against Oklahoma at the crib, against Alabama at the crib. These are the games that you have to win to prove that you're in that upper echelon. Ole Miss on the road at Texas A&M. These are the games you have to win. I'm not saying you're going to win all of them. That's why there's a 10-2. I think your biggest threats are at LSU, back home for Alabama, and yes, back home for Clemson. Now, maybe we got a different vibe on Clemson by that point in the season. Clemson, I think, is going to come into that game either as an 11-0 undefeated, they're going to the ACC title game, they're on an inside track for the college football playoffs, or they're going to be coming into that game 8-3 and looking to take out their frustration for missing the playoffs, maybe missing the ACC title game on you. Either way, you know what that game is. That game could be two teams that are 6-5. That game could be two teams that are 11-0. It's got the same weight to it. I think 10-2 is probably the ceiling for this team. If they get to 10-2, I think that's good enough for a playoff bid. You might be bidding for the 12 seed. You might be bidding to get yourself in the back door. You might be bidding to be the last team in. But the last team in is still in. The last team in has still got a chance to win a college football national championship. The last team in is still going dancing. I think 10-2 will get you there. The problem is, I think to get to that 10-2, the problem is, I think to get to that mark, you're going to have to pretty much play as much of your best football as you can in that middle stretch of games. But then as we talked about, there's the other side of that coin. You got a 5-game stretch with 5 opponents inside the top 20. You got LSU, you got Ole Miss, you got Alabama. Those 3 teams kept you out of the playoffs last year. You got all 3 again this year. You got a home game against Oklahoma. You got a home game against the Crimson Tide. Those are must-win games if you want a playoff bid. You have to finish off Alabama this year. You cannot let them climb back into it. And then, of course, Oxford, College Station, and the Palmetto Bowl against Clemson during rivalry weekend. 28-1 odds to win the conference. I'm not calling that shot yet. Because obviously you would also have to go on the road to Atlanta and win one more game. I think it's possible you get there. I think it's possible you're in that mix. I think it's possible you're in that discussion. But you're going to have to play pretty close to perfect football throughout that entire ride. We have talked about it ad nauseum. In fact, I got into a discussion on Friday or Saturday, it doesn't matter. I got into a discussion with a friend of mine who is a South Carolina Gamecock, and we were going back and forth about this. And he said, you know, the problem that I'm having right now, Rob Brown, is the fact that it seems like you and all your nerdy sports talk media buddies, it seems to me like all of you are pinning our hopes and dreams on the Norris Sellers. And I said, do you know why that is? Because we are. And there's nothing wrong with that. I want you to think about some of the best teams in football. The Texas Longhorns of 05 ain't Texas without Vince Young. All right, the Florida Gators in their two national championships. They ain't the Florida Gators without Tim Tebow. There is nothing wrong with that. As goes Lenoris, go the South Carolina Gamecocks. 10-2 the ceiling, 6-6 the floor.
I mean, duh. Lenoris Sellers will decide how well the Gamecocks do. All right, the first thing that's X-ing today on this fine program is Paige Beckers.
Paige Beckers is X-ing because last night her Dallas Wings took on Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever, the first time that those two have gotten together since Paige Beckers made into the league. They were supposed to play a few weeks back, but Paige Beckers had to miss that game. I believe had concussion protocol, if I recall correctly. But the Fever rattled off 64 first-half points behind a 36-15 second quarter. Never looked back. Ended up winning that game 102-83. Caitlin Clark, 13 of Indiana's 30 assists on 40 makes, a season-best mark for her and a Fever record in regulation. Beckers led all scorers. She had, what, I think 21 points in that contest last night, the fourth longest streak of double-figure scoring to start a WNBA career. She has now done it in 17 games, also had four assists, four boards, and two steals in the contest.
All right, the next thing it's X-ing is Mr. Terrific.
That movie kicks ass, and Mr. Terrific steals every scene he's in. Do we agree? He's the best part of that movie that's not Lex Luthor and Superman.
He's really good. Superman made $217 million. Over the weekend, it was 230 to make it. So I think they're probably going to get there.
It's going to be interesting. This movie is up in a bit of a challenge right now because it is absolutely turning numbers domestically. Here's the problem: the expectation is it's not going to do great internationally. It's not going to do great.
By the way, that 217, that's worldwide. So.
But it kicked ass domestically.
Domestically, I think it was like 130. So, yeah.
I think it's gonna be okay. But at a point in time right now, look, it is what it is. Superman is obviously an iconic American superhero, and international feelings about the United States right now are, let's say, polarized to say the best, and so there is some fear that the implications of that may damage its ability to make money internationally, but we will know in a couple of weeks when those numbers start.
By the way, I don't think it will. Maybe in the Axis of Evil, but that's about it. This movie's that good. It will get past some of that stuff. All right, the next thing that's X-ing is Patrick Mahomes.
I have no idea. Let me guess. Some nerd loser podcaster called him fat.
No, that was okay. A week ago. The top 10 quarterbacks, according to coaches, players, and the media, was released today, and Patrick Mahomes is number one. But there's people upset that Jalen Hurts.
No, dude.
Is number nine.
I got into this on the Saturday show. Anybody who thinks Jalen Hurts is above Patrick Mahomes didn't watch the Eagles last year.
By the way,
Saquon Barkley's the heart and soul of that team.
Josh Allen 2, Joe Burrow 3, Lamar 4.
You know what? I'm good with that. Honestly, I'm good with that. Josh Allen 2, Joe Burrow 3, Lamar Jackson 4. I wouldn't fight back. You know what? I would fight back if you said it, Lamar against Joe Burrow. I think the sins of the Bengals offense, I think the sins of the Bengals defense are being held against Joe Burrow. Would that man throw for 737,000 yards and 9,000 touchdowns last year, but the Bengals defense was so booty cheeks that it didn't matter?
Exactly. One last one. Well, two. One is Becky Hogan, and the other one is Naomi.
Naomi, of course, your and new WWE Women's World Champion, cashed in last night during the, from what I understand, I'm good with the swerve, I'm good with the twist, I'm good with the cash in, except from what I understand, and I haven't watched it yet, it's on the docket for either tonight or tomorrow. From what I understand, Rhea Ripley and Io Sky were putting on a five-star banger of a match.
Which is the best time to cash in because they both beat each other up.
Yeah.
Whoever's going to win, I mean, she came out and did what she did.
Yeah, I got into it with somebody on Twitter because they were like, oh, why would you ruin that five-star match with a cash-in? And I'm like, yo, if you look at this in kayfabe, isn't the best time for the ultimate opportunists to turn in a briefcase? Wouldn't it be after the champ and the challenger spent 30 minutes kicking the absolute dog snot out of each other? I would think it is. All right, that's it for us, people. We are live all 4 days. Stay tuned to the social medias, at the FanUp State, at the Rob Brown Show, because I will be here until late into the evening, bringing you everything I can bring you. And when we come back tomorrow, we will have interviews, we'll have sound bites and updates as we are live at SEC Media Days at the College Football Hall of Fame in Atlanta, Georgia, presented by Ingles for Lawn. So I'm Rob. We'll see you back here tomorrow to do it all over again, but better, on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. Later.